Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Now, some of you may have heard a recent installment of a Morning Edition series called Citizen Student. The latest piece featured two of this country's historians debating the teaching of patriotism in American schools. Howard Zinn is the author of A People's History of the United States. Peter Gibbon's book is A Call to Heroism, Renewing America's Vision of Greatness. Now, both Howard and Peter tackled modern-day civics in a debate at the University of Pennsylvania. The small bit I heard on Morning Edition convinced me we should invite them to The Connection for a rematch, a chance to include you as listeners in the conversation about teaching patriotism at a time of war. Connection listeners, especially now, with over 100,000 American soldiers currently overseas, in the Gulf, is this the time to teach students to love America or to question its policies abroad? Can teachers do both? And should the purpose of civics education be to teach patriotism? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Howard Zinn is here. He's a professor emeritus at Boston University and author of numerous books and articles. Peter Gibbons also in the studio. He's a research associate at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and also the author of many articles. Welcome to both of you. Nice to have you here.
Dick, good to be with you this morning.
Howard, can I start with you? Should patriotism be taught in high school?
Well, yes, depending on what you mean by patriotism.
I thought we'd end up there.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there are two kinds of patriotism. There's a kind of patriotism which says, oh, you know, I support my government no matter what it does. And then there's a kind of patriotism which means, no, I won't support the government no matter what it does. I'll support the principles for which this country is supposed to stand. In other words, I would distinguish between support for the government and support for the country. You know, very often you hear people saying, well, you must fight for your country. Well, in most wars, you don't really fight for your country. You're fighting for the people who run the government, and you're fighting for their interests and not for yours. I would go back to the Declaration of Independence, and I would suggest that there's a difference between the government and the country. The Declaration of Independence makes it clear that governments are artificial creations. They are set up by the people of the country to achieve certain ends: equality, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And according to the Declaration of Independence, when governments become destructive of those ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish the government. That's pretty strong language. But I think that's the founding democratic principle. And so when a government becomes destructive of those ends of life and liberty, when a government is going to send young people into war for reasons which don't make any sense, I think it is the patriotic obligation of people not to support the government, to resist it at every turn.
Well, there's a great big buffet to work from, Peter, but I should start back at the beginning right. of the feast and give you the same question. Should patriotism be taught in high school?
Well, Dick, let's start with a definition of the word patriotism. Patriotism means love of country, defense of country. It doesn't mean being only skeptical or critical of your country. I certainly think, I was a history teacher for years, and I think young people should be taught critical inquiry. They should be taught facts and chronology. But at the end of the game, the purpose of a history education in America is to teach informed loyalty to the nation, which I would describe as patriotism. Now, Howard is absolutely right that the Declaration provides for the overthrow and rebellion against the government in extreme circumstances. But since I believe that we're not at that point in America and never have been, I don't believe that that kind of rebellion is necessary or appropriate.
And when you talk about patriotism as a kind of informed loyalty, does that run counter in your mind to what Howard's saying about challenging the government, about critical thinking? Are you saying there comes a point where loyalty comes ahead of or alongside of someone's ability to or right to or obligation to criticize?
Well, I think that, of course, there's provision for civil disobedience in our history. And if you feel strongly enough about the government's policies, you, of course, have the right to take the consequences and go to jail. But I think the most important thing for teachers to teach kids is, first of all, to believe, to have faith in the country. And I think that's a more important goal than only critical inquiry.
Howard Zinn, since 9/11, a lot of these topics have become everyday dinner table, playground topics. And teachers, students are going into classrooms asking questions about American foreign policy and should this country go to war with Iraq and all those questions. What's the obligation of a teacher at a high school level? I know you've got very strong ideas about the university being a place where people should challenge. Does that hold true with at the high school level as well?
I think it holds especially true at the high school level, because it's in high school that young people begin to learn history in a serious way. It's also in high school that there's a kind of militarism that surrounds the atmosphere of high schools. I mean, Army recruiters come to high schools to recruit. Young people of high school age are viewing war movies all the time on television and on the big screen. So high schools are places where young people begin to think about what loyalty is, what America is. And I think it is very important for young people to begin to understand that to love America is not to love your government and what it does.
But let me replace the word government with country. Is it the obligation of the high school teacher to teach the students to love their country?
Oh, I think students should love our country, yes. But to love the country is not the same as loving government, government policies, or, well, take this particular situation, right, the impending war on Iraq. To love your country means, to me, at this point, to oppose the government's rush to war, because I believe the government's rush to war is detrimental to the interests of the people in this country. Immediately detrimental to the young men and women who are going overseas, and also immediately detrimental to the civil liberties of people here at home, immediately detrimental to the needs that people have here in the United States for health and education and all the things that are being put way back while huge sums of money are being given for war. So, yes, I think particularly now it is very important for people to criticize the government. For young people in high school, I think it is very important for them to begin to learn the history of America's wars, the history of deception by government, the history of the Vietnam War, the history of the lies that were told to the people during the Vietnam War, for them to begin to see as important and heroic people not the military heroes that are generally paraded before kids in the high schools, but the anti-war heroes, the Helen Kellers who spoke about against World War I, Martin Luther King's great speech at the Riverside Church in 1967 when he spoke out against the Vietnam War.
Dick, if I could interrupt, I disagree with Howard that a war curriculum or war movies is dominant in schools. I'm in schools. All Quiet on the Western Front is a standard novel. The poetry of Wilfred Owen is taught not only in high schools, but I was amazed in the Times it says it's even taught at West Point. So I think that the curriculum in American schools is very much anti-war and that Americans are only reluctant warriors. And I think the
You're saying this is a good thing.
I think this is a good thing. I think it's a good thing that that we make our kids into reluctant warriors. Now, I think the peace curriculum has gone too far. I think that Audie Murphy, Sergeant York, General MacArthur are often excluded from high school curriculum. So I do think we're out of balance. I think it's good that kids read anti-war poetry. But I think they should also recognize the heroism of MacArthur, Eisenhower, Sergeant York. So I do think our curriculum needs to be more balanced.
Is it fair to say, and I think Howard's written this in the past, so I'll quote him, that you know, the history is written by the people who won it, that we're more likely to see something about or by Henry Kissinger than we are Bob Dylan and who's the hero at that point. How are kids meant to make those decisions? How big a role does the teacher play in that?
I think the history that kids are getting today is more often than not the history of the victims. Howard's book, to give it a little plug here, is about to sell its millionth copy. Maybe a million of my books should be in American schools. I think that kids have not enough interest in entrepreneurs, soldiers. The elites are sort of demonized by Howard and the revisionist historians. Soldiers are demonized, and that's picked up by a lot of kids in schools.
Is that coming from the teachers?
I think it's from the teachers. I think it's from the university professors. I think it's from books like Lies My Teacher Told Me, A People's History of the United States. So I think the history of the forgotten, the history of the underclass is very much alive in our schools. And I think we've come back into balance. I mean, originally we were out of balance. The triumphalist view that America is only a march to goodness and greatness, a la George Bancroft, is wrong. But the view a la Howard Zinn that the history of America is exploitation, greed, and domination by elites is also wrong.
Well, you know, I would like to think that Peter is right when he describes what is being taught in high schools. And there's some truth in what he says. That is, there are more teachers today who are teaching their students to be critical of American policy. I think there are more teachers today who are teaching Native American history, black history, women's history. I don't think it dominates the teaching in high schools today. But aside from that, I think it is still extremely important for students to learn to respect the people who fought all through American history against injustice. And I mean the people who formed the labor unions and went on strike in this country, the abolitionists, the people in the civil rights movement.
Peter, you're saying they are getting the necessary attention.
And I think they deserve it. I wrote a piece celebrating Mother Jones. I just wrote a piece celebrating Martin Luther King. I think the people that often don't get the attentions are the presidents, the businessmen, and the soldiers who are demonized by the radical revisionist historians.
Well, that's a different picture that I get. To me, it seems that presidents, well, you were just talking, Peter, about the fact there's going to be some President's Day. There's no Labor Leaders' Day. There's no anti-war activists' day. Presidents, and I think this is still true, presidents get the most attention. History teachers generally see history through the eyes of, the age of Jackson, the age of Roosevelt, the founding fathers. How many students learn about Shays' Rebellion? How many students learn that the founding fathers, how many students read Beard's Economic Interpretation of the Constitution and learn that the founding fathers had very, very powerful economic interests in creating the Constitution?
Connection listeners, we'll pick that up when we come back after the break. We'll be talking with a high school history teacher about what's going on in his classroom and taking your calls at 1-800-423-8255. Should patriotism be taught in high school? If so, what is it that should be taught? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Should patriotism be taught in high school? And if we agree that it should, then what should be taught? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Peter Gibbon. He's a research associate in education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He has a book called A Call to Heroism, Renewing America's Vision of Greatness. Howard Zinn is also with me. He's a professor emeritus at Boston University. And his book, A People's History of the United States, is widely widely used in college and university classrooms to take a different view of the history as seen through presidential administrations. And we're joined on the line now by Nathaniel Rono. He teaches history and economics at the local public high school in Waltham, Massachusetts. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thanks for joining us. I'm interested in your telling us, I mean, do you teach patriotism in class?
Patriotism, it's tough to say how you teach patriotism. And I'm sorry, I joined you a little late, so maybe you've already discussed the definition of the word.
No, we've just agreed that there is no definition of the
right.
word.
So, you know, the dictionary definition is love of one's country. And how do you teach that? I've found that you can teach facts and you can teach critical thinking skills that would help kids love their country regardless of their political take. I caught the tail end of the discussion before the break.
These kids, I would guess, Nathaniel, are now asking you lots of questions. Mr. Rono, should the U.S. go into Iraq? Mr.
Yeah.
Rono, what about the, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the more that we find tragedies or significant news events around us, the kids definitely have heightened curiosity with regard to, you know, foreign policy, current politics, and so on. But I think it's, I mean, as a teacher, I try to help them understand the facts and help them understand the foreign policy decisions and make their own, come up with their own assessment of whether they agree with it or disagree with it. And what I caught at the tail end of the conversation before the break was really, I think we're getting caught on looking at factual information and what facts to look at, what facts to analyze, and not so much how to analyze them. I mean, you can teach kids, you can concentrate on specific areas of let's just say the United States history curriculum. But you're always going to exclude certain things, and you know, you don't want to give a one-sided standpoint. I think it's important to equip students, at least at the high school level, with the tools that they need to make critical decisions and come up with their own assessment of whether something is fair or not fair or patriotic or excessively nationalist or whether they agree with the politics. I think that's sort of my mission more as a high school teacher.
Nathaniel, has your classroom changed since 9/11 in a way that you can measure?
Yeah, it has. 9/11 is really on the tips of a lot of students' tongues. I teach economics as well as history, and it comes into the conversation an awful lot. I've actually had this discussion with some of my colleagues that right after 9/11, I felt like high school students were very eager to reach out. There was a sort of I don't know what the word is, a sort of a compassion that I think a lot of kids felt. And we had, you know, fundraisers. One student sold ribbons and donated the money to the Salvation Army and so on. But I found that to have, it's waned in a way, and that the sort of the positivity that resulted from 9/11 in the sense of the kids' emotions, that's waned. I don't know if you can chalk that up to, you know, short attention spans or other news taking a more significant role. I really don't know.
One of my guests here, Nathaniel Peter Gibbons, said that a definition of loyalty that he works with of patriotism that he works with is informed loyalty. Does that work for you?
Informed loyalty?
Yeah.
I think the assumption there is that you can create loyalty out of information, and I'm a little leery of that.
Peter, do you want to jump in here? I don't want to be your agent here.
Yeah, I take issue with Nathaniel's characterization of compassion being the major reaction. I think it was anger, defense of country, loyalty to country. That was the immediate reaction to 9/11. People started saying the pledge. People started singing patriotic songs. So I think predictably in time of war, there's a tremendous increase of patriotism and the expression of that patriotism. I mean, Nathaniel's absolutely right that part of his mission as a high school teacher is to teach critical thinking skills. But at the end of the day, I think a part of his mission is also to teach respect for the American nation, and that the goal of a social studies curriculum is not to trash America's past, but ultimately to build confidence and respect for the nation.
I agree with that, but I think it's hard to tell a kid that they should not. You said trashing America's past. I mean, if you have students who and I do, who come from a variety of different different backgrounds, you're going to hear the question, well, what about the Indians? Or what about, you know, African Americans at that time? What about the slaves? And you know, I think it's a necessary element to show a multifaceted part of our history and let kids make up their own minds. You're not going to get their loyalty, or you're not going to get them to be patriotic if you ignore parts of our past that may be a little less savory than others. That's just my opinion on that.
I agree completely. I think that America's weaknesses and flaws should be acknowledged. But I think the larger picture is America's goodness and greatness, which I think is not enough acknowledged among history teachers today.
I would take it one step farther and say that by acknowledging those things and by allowing students the trusting them to make those decisions, that they are even going to foster more love of one's country. That, you know, I mean, I say it all the time. We live in a country where we can talk about these flaws, and it's still a great country. And with that, I think the kids will agree with you, but by trying to work their curriculum a certain way to get a certain reaction, I'm just a little leery of that.
Nathaniel, I know you ducked out of class to join us on the program today, so I'll thank you and send you back.
Thank you very much.
Nathaniel Rano is a history and economics teacher at the high school in Waltham, Massachusetts. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, and we'll take our first call in from also from Waltham. Robert's on the line. Hi, Robert.
How you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for you. Dr. Zinn, and I've read his work before, and I'm really proud. I'm talking to him right now. I just have a fundamental disagreement with his assumption. Very early in the show, he said, when you're actually going to war and fighting for the government, it's their ends and their goals that you have to fight for. And maybe that's true in a very low practical level, but the government is us. We are the government. We elect these people to do those kinds of things. And when we vote for them, we're voting for them in the knowledge that they're going to make us do things that maybe we don't want to do because they think that's the right thing to do. If we don't like it, fine, we can vote them out of office. So if you want a more practical example in the modern world, think of the civil rights movement. A lot of the country didn't think we were doing the right thing, you know, basically going down in the South and forcing our own citizens to do what we thought was the right thing. But at the time, that was what the government leaders thought was the best thing to do, and a lot of people disagree, but we went along with it. It was almost a war, but we went along with it because that's what our government is. It's us. So if you put up to students, especially young students, that everything the government does is not in your interest. It's somebody else's interest. And you always have to question everything they do because it's not going to help you, and it's definitely somebody else's deal. You're breaking the contract that the government is us.
Okay, hang on, Robert. Let me let Howard Zinn in here.
No, I don't think the government is us. I don't think you can simply place your faith in the government and let it do what it wants to do once it has been elected. Aside from the fact that elections are bought. Elections are not free. Elections are controlled by money. And there are times when elections don't even represent the majority of the voters, as in the election of 2000.
So just deconstructed everything that is democratic about the country.
Well, I don't think that's what's democratic about the country. I don't think democracy depends on elections. I think democracy depends on what citizens do and citizens' movements and how citizens react to issues of justice and injustice. So, you know, during the Vietnam War, there were people who said, well, we elected Johnson, and therefore if he takes us into the war, well, we voted for him. No, we don't give a president a blank check. That would not be democracy. Democracy means citizens observing every day, every week, every hour what the government does, whether it's been elected or not, and checks up on the government and opposes the government when the government, as today, is taking us into an immoral and unjust war.
Peter, the government
Nathaniel,
is us?
Nathaniel finished his statement by saying he believes in criticism, but it's a great country. My fundamental disagreement with Howard is that I don't think he thinks it's a great country. I think he thinks that our leaders betray us, our history is something to be ashamed of, and that it's not a country to be proud of. And I think that's really where yeah. we disagree.
You know where we disagree? We disagree on what we want to be proud of in our country. I am proud of our country, but I'm not proud of our leaders. I'm not proud of the history of the extermination of Indian tribes. I'm not proud of American foreign policy. I'm not proud of American military intervention. I'm not proud of American support of dictators all over the world. There's so many things I'm not proud of. What I am proud of is the American people. That is the country. I'm proud of the American people who have struggled against overwhelming power, struggled for racial justice, struggled against war, struggled for economic justice,
sometimes
struggled for the rights of labor.
Sometimes yeah. with their leaders, sometimes in opposition to those leaders.
Yes, but you know, mostly.
Well, I'm also
mostly with mostly taking an initiative that the government has not taken. I mean, the civil rights movement initiatives were not taken by the government. They were taken by black people in the South, and then the government reacted and responded.
Howard, I'm proud of protesters, but I'm also proud of America's humanitarianism, America's incredible abundance. I'm proud of the Marshall Plan. I'm proud of the end of communism. I'm proud of the triumph over fascism. I think that there are many other things to be proud of about America besides protesters, but I agree that's a legitimate thing to be proud of, particularly if they're on the right side.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. And one of the most fascinating things about listening to the two of you is that I keep taking what you're saying and trying to put it back into the classroom, and it takes me closer and closer to a sense of just how subjective so many of these things that we're asking our teachers to teach our kids about, just how unbelievably subjective it is in their choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Teaching is subjective. History is subjective. You can't teach history without having a point of view. And I think it's good that you have a point of view, so long as you honestly state your point of view to your students and so long as they have access to other points of view. But I think it's important, if you are a teacher who cares about what is happening in the world, it's important that you present to your students enough information so that they understand what is wrong with the world.
30 years in the classroom.
I think they should. The information should be presented so they understand what is right with the world. Carlyle famously says, "First find out what is true, then find out what is false." Howard finds out what is false, then he looks for the truth.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee now. Jerry's joining us. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you for your program.
Yeah, go ahead.
I happened to teach high school honors history in the mid-60s between finishing a master's and going on for a PhD in history. And my experience at that time was that the basic curriculum was more indoctrination than education.
Indoctrination into what, Jerry?
Well, at that time, there were a number of courses that were not just history, but in the area of political science, too, called Americanism versus Communism. Every student had to take it, and when you looked at the curriculum and the guidelines for it, everything else, it completely excluded anything but this one narrow perspective. And I encountered, teaching honors and trying to give them varying perspectives, I encountered a significant resistance from the administration. I would also like to say that my experience, and I have not seen this change by reviewing current teaching practices in a number of the schools, is that the curriculum is to a degree shaped and reinforced by the textbook that is adopted. The textbooks are often out of date, and the teachers, unfortunately, often are grounded in that curriculum based on that textbook. It is not one that encourages people to look at different perspectives and to realize that in many ways the facts that are stressed are determined by the perspective that is determined by the questions asked by the perspective that one holds.
I can tell you, Jerry, that the 10th grade history book that was in the hands of Peter Gibbon was Triumph of the American Past. And
mm-hmm.
And I'm interested, Peter, in response to what Jerry's saying, are we looking at a change from a time when history was an opportunity to sort of be triumphal
sure.
about it?
We definitely are. I mean, he's absolutely right that triumphalism was sort of the normal mode of instruction in the 1950s and the early 60s. Howard's book, to give it its due, reversed that to some degree. My only argument is that now we're out of balance and that we have a very harsh revisionist view of American history that demonizes elites, entrepreneurs, soldiers, and that we've gone from triumphalism to radical revisionism. And I would like to see us sort of in the middle with something I call a moderate triumphalism, which I feel is appropriate for a K-12 curriculum. A moderate triumphalism would not say that America is automatically a march to goodness and greatness. It would acknowledge weaknesses and flaws, but it would say that on balance, America is the great hope of the world. And I think it's significant that the rest of the world wants to come here. No one wants to go to Cuba. No one wants to go to Russia. America is the envy of the world. America is the dominant power in the world. And I think it's worthy of respect and admiration, ultimately.
All right, Connection listeners, these are interesting times. There is no question about that. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. When we come back after the break, my guest Howard Zinn will talk about the idea of moderate triumphalism. We'll take more of your calls on just what should be happening in the high schools, particularly now when kids are asking so many questions, reading so many conflicting opinions, and wondering what the right attitude should be. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
Listening to The Connection from NPR, I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK, and this hour, a conversation about patriotism and the classroom. With me in the studio, Peter Gibbon, research associate at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, Howard Zinn, professor emeritus, Boston University Political Science Department. And I thought I'd begin this segment with a quote of President Bush. This is September 17th, anniversary of the signing of the Constitution, just this past year, said in the where was he speaking? In the Rose Garden. Our history is not a story of perfection. It's a story of imperfect people working toward great ideals. This flawed nation is also a really good nation, and the principles we hold are the hope of all mankind. When children are given the real history of America, they will also learn to love America. It sounds a little bit like moderate triumphalism to me.
Well, I think when young people are given the real history of America, they will be very suspicious of a president who says that we are the hope of the world. I think that if young people learn history and they listen to the president call for us to go to war, they'll be very skeptical, because they will learn about all the times in which we've been exhorted to go to wars for democracy, for liberty, for self-determination. They will learn about the Vietnam War, and they will ask, why did these 58,000 Americans die, and why did 2 million Vietnamese die? And they will learn that they died on the basis of lies and presidential deceit.
What's the downside, though, of having a nation of school children who are suspicious and skeptical and looking at what's said even today as a lie?
Well, they don't have to start out believing that it's a lie, but they have not to start out believing that it's the truth. They have to start out being willing to examine whether it's true or not. So when the president says that we are fighting for democracy, well, then the students have a right to ask, what in the world are we fighting for? Why are we going to bomb a country which is not attacking us, which is not threatening us? If students learn the history of our relationship with tyrants, of the America's friendly relationship with tyrants all over the world, they might ask questions of, are we really going to war because Saddam Hussein is a tyrant? I think skepticism would lead students to refuse to support this war.
Let's go back to our phones. 1-800-423-8255. To Louisville, Kentucky now. Chuck's joining us. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. This is an extraordinarily interesting conversation.
I'm glad you joined us.
I have to go along with the informed triumphalism argument there.
Okay. What's missing in what Howard Zinn's saying? What's your problem with that?
I think this is what I think. So, of course, it's subjective, okay? I think that he's got a fairly intense dislike for his country, for his government, for the political system as it is. And I think he's heavily into propagandizing his viewpoint. I mean, I really, to be honest with you, I would prefer the children just be informed with absolutely no slant whatsoever.
So let me use an example that Howard Zinn often uses, and that is the Vietnam War, where he says that people were told that this was a war worth fighting and some seven or eight years later concluded that it wasn't.
I was in Vietnam for 3 years, all right? And when I look back on that, and I look at what happened to Cambodia after the war, and I look what happened to South Vietnam after the war, I have to conclude that we left too early, Mr. Howard.
Well, we left Vietnam too early.
We left Vietnam too early.
We left
before,
early.
Rather
in
than,
other words, we could have continued killing more people, bombing more villages, spreading more Agent Orange around the country.
Go ahead, Chuck. Jump in there.
I think that whatever we did, we probably didn't kill off 3 million people in Cambodia. I don't think we brought Pol Pot to power.
Chuck, can I ask you a question about history, though? How it is that you teach it in school when the views of what has happened and what may happen are just so subjective, so different?
That's why I think I'm not adverse to teaching the truth. You know, there's a whole lot of things that have went down in this country in the past that were wrong. That's just that we're flat wrong, okay? But I think that we have transcended those wrongs. I think we have transcended those wrongs. I think that, for want of a better phrase, we're muddling along towards not perfection, but at least goodness.
Peter, this is the idea that that a country learns from its mistakes.
I agree. I think that Vietnam was a mistake. We learned from it. And if we go to war against Iraq, which I pray we don't, that it will be short and swift, unlike the Vietnam War. And I think the president is absolutely right that by learning about our country, we love our country, particularly in opposition to the Taliban and to Iraq, who do not believe in democratic rights, who do not believe in freedom of discussion, who do not believe in equality. And one of the goals of a secondary school education is to show how much different we are from the tyrants that now threaten us and the terrorists that threaten us.
We're going to go back to the phones. Chuck, thanks for your call now to Leicester, Massachusetts. Alice is on the line. Hi, Alice.
Hi, how are you? I love your program.
Thank you for calling.
I wanted to say that I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have two young kids, and my husband's been in the military for 22 years. I'm a registered Democrat. I think it is so important now more than ever to teach patriotism in school. I think that kids today do not realize how lucky they are to live in this country. And that when I was growing up, my parents always said, we're going to vote, and it's a wonderful opportunity. And I never understood that. The day I turned 18, I have voted in every election since. Just the right to vote, to elect our government, is so important. And it's so important to teach our kids these things.
Alice, when you talk about teaching patriotism, is it more, though, than voting?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But question government, absolutely question government. But I think Mr. Zinn is extremely pessimistic. I obviously, when you're teaching history, give both sides. But I think that if Mr. Zinn was my professor, I would have been very depressed. I think you really have to go in it with a positive outlook and teach our kids that they are extremely lucky to live in this country. Show them world. The world outlook. I listen to the BBC on this radio station every day, and you have to listen to what's happening around the world. And I appreciate this country more and more every day by doing so.
Howard Zinn, you're depressing students all over the nation.
Well, sorry to depress you.
I obviously respect opinions. Everyone should have their own opinion.
Sure. No, it's very depressing. When you read the history of American foreign policy, when you read the history of American military interventions, that's depressing. What's not depressing, and this is what I try to leave my students with, what's not depressing is to learn about all the American people who have protested and resisted what the government was doing when they thought it was wrong. That is not depressing. That is encouraging. That is inspiring to learn about so many Americans who thought independently of government and who stood up for the rights of others. You spoke about a world outlook. I think it is very important to have a world outlook. A world outlook means that you think about people in other countries as much as you think about people here. It means that you think that the children of Iraq have as much of a right to live as children in the United States. If you have such a world outlook, if you really believe in the equality of all children in the world, you cannot go to war. When you go to war, you are going to make war against children. And if you have a world outlook, then you must avoid war and must figure out a way to deal with tyranny and terrorism and to do it without killing large numbers of innocent people, which is exactly what terrorists do.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. And Peter, given the words that Alice used at the beginning of her comment was, now more than ever, patriotism needs to be taught in the school.
Well, she also used the words gratitude and appreciation. And I think that Americans, when they're under assault and when they realize how rare and precious democratic freedoms are, that they become much more patriotic. And I respectfully disagree with Howard. I think that the history of American foreign policy has been that of a country reluctant to throw its weight around, reluctant to go to war. We love making money. We love sports. We love excellence and achievement. We lead the world in Nobel Prizes. We do not love making war. We're driven to war by dictators like Hitler, Stalin, Saddam Hussein.
Alice, I don't know. Are you still there?
I'm here. May I say one last thing?
Of course.
What country cannot say, Mr. Zinn was saying, Vietnam, I heard a lot of other things you were saying throughout the program. What other country cannot give both sides of history, the positive and the negative? There isn't a country out there. We have to appreciate what we have and move forward. Try to make peace. I do not want to go to war. Absolutely not. But when we have people like Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, we are, as you said, driven to war. I unfortunately would avoid it at all costs, but we can't just sit back and let people like that take over the world.
All right, well, let's put it in that sort of comparative context to conclude, if we can, Howard. The textbooks in China don't necessarily tell the story to the children there. The textbooks in India don't tell the story of the last 50 years very accurately either. Is this the wrong way to go?
Textbooks. Textbooks everywhere are nationalistic, and our textbooks are no different. Textbooks everywhere tend to exalt their own governments, and I think that ours does that too. So I think we ought to get away from that. And I think that, you know, right now, teaching patriotism, if patriotism means supporting the government and going to war, I think then teaching patriotism is a very dangerous thing. Right now, Iraq, with its tyrant, is not an immediate danger to anybody around it, and certainly not to the United States. Right now, the United States by going to war against Iraq when it has not been attacked, when Iraq is not attacking anyone. Iraq right now is not a clear and present danger to the world. Right now, President Bush and the people around him are a clear and present danger to the peace of the Middle East and to the peace of the world and to the civil liberties of people here at home. I think patriotism right now demands that we speak up against war and we speak up against the this macho feeling that we see at the top of the government, that America must be the greatest, America must be the best, this triumphalism, which I think goes against a world outlook, which goes against the idea all people are created equal.
Peter Gibbon, let me put you back in the classroom and ask you if the hand went up and, Mr. Gibbon, what are we supposed to think about what's about to happen? How do you cope with that question?
Well, I do think that textbooks should be a little bit nationalistic. The purpose of a history curriculum in textbooks is not to denigrate the country that they're representing. At the same time, the difficulty in a great democracy is to have open discussion, free debate, and at the same time, at the end of the day, to have loyalty to nation. And I do think when the nation is under attack, when we talk about the fatherland, there certainly will be a legitimate and commendable sort of step up of patriotism in schools and in the society.
Can you be patriotic and say, I disagree with this war and stand on the street and say that?
Definitely. That's the great thing about America, that we're a nation in which all wars have been contested. World War II was contested, Vietnam, World War I. This war will be contested, and that's the great thing about America, that we can have open discussion. But at the end of the day, I think that we should be loyal to our president and secretary of state and national security advisor when, on the basis of the information they have, much of which we don't have, they decide that Saddam Hussein is a clear and present danger to the peace of the world, and that for 10 years he's been abrogating the treaties that he signs, and that with the development of the nuclear weapon, he will be a greater threat.
We need to stall the school bell here. We need more time in the classroom. Peter Gibbon, thank you so much for coming in. It was nice to have you on the program.
Thanks, Dick.
Peter Gibbon's a research associate in education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Howard Zinn, nice to have you in the studio again.
Thanks, Dick.
Mr. Zinn is author of A People's History of the United States and professor emeritus at Boston University. Earlier in the program, we talked with Nathaniel Rano. He teaches history and economics at Waltham High School in Waltham, Massachusetts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.